What would you do if you owned a motel?
This was it. This was our ticket onto the good roller coaster.
Carefully, I hid the piece of paper inside a library book and smuggled it back to class. I didn't want my classmates to see it. $300 was nothing to them, and a bunch of them were probably great writers. If they saw it, they'd all want to enter, and then I'd be doomed. I clutched the book tightly with both hands and walked back to class, passing Lupe on the way to my seat. I slid into my seat and glanced over at her. She arched her eyebrows. "What's up?" And I shrugged my shoulders. "Nothing much."
"All right, kids, listen up," Mrs. Douglas said. "Today we're going to learn about China."
A boy behind me raised his hand.
"Yes, Stuart?"
"Is China in Japan?"
Stuart asked. Jason turned around and glared at him.
"No, idiot. It's not in Japan."
Stuart shriveled in his seat.
"Well, where's China then?"
he asked.
"In China," Jason said.
"Oh." Mrs. Douglas told Jason and Stuart both to hush, and she started talking about the imperial era and Qin Shi Huang, the first emperor of China. She showed us a picture of Qin Shi Huang. I don't know where Mrs. Douglas got her picture from, but in the picture, Qin Shi Huang's eyes were ridiculously slanted. His eyebrows went all the way up to his forehead. The kids in the front row couldn't stop cracking up. Every time Mrs. Douglas wrote something on the board, they would turn around and make slanted eyes at me and Jason. This prompted Jason to raise his hand.
"Excuse me, Mrs. Douglas," he said. "I'd just like to clarify, I'm not Chinese. I'm Taiwanese."
"Okay,"
Mrs. Douglas said. Stuart raised his hand again.
"Is that in Japan?" he asked.
"No, you moron," Jason yelled. "That's not in Japan either." As Mrs. Douglas reprimanded Jason for calling Stuart a moron, I sat very quietly in my seat. I knew I should have felt glad that Jason clarified to everyone that he was not the same as me, but I couldn't help but feel a little sad, too. Because now, when the kids in the front row turned around, they only made slanted eyes at me. Chapter 20. I ran up the stairs two at a time, holding the book from the library, the one with the essay contest printed out in it. I couldn't wait to tell my parents. Before I could open my mouth, my mother looked at my book and frowned.
"Another new book?" she said. "You should be spending more time doing math, something you can actually get good at."
Then she became all nostalgic.
"You know, when I was your age, I used to eavesdrop on my brother's math lessons."
Yeah. I didn't have time for this."
"I'm not you, Mom,"
I exclaimed. The words came shooting out of my mouth, and my mom flinched.
"I'm sorry, I just mean, maybe I like something else."
"Like what?"
she asked. She put her broom down and crossed her arms. I bit my lip.
"Like writing?"
"English writing?"
she asked, like it was the most preposterous thing in the world, like I just said basket weaving. I nodded.
"You heard Mr. Yao. You gotta be native at English, and I'm sorry, but we're just not."
"Mr. Yao? Since when was he an expert on anything other than meanness?"
"You can, however, be native at math."
"I don't want to be native at math."
My mom frowned.
"You're not getting it, are you?"
she said. She sat down on the bed and looked me in the eye.
"You just can't be as good as the white kids in their language, honey. It's their language."
My gaze sank to the floor. As I dragged myself out of the room, my mother called after me,
"Someday you'll thank me."
"She's wrong," I told myself. "She was wrong to the power of infinity." I thought about picking up the phone to call Lupe, but instead I flipped on the TV. A rerun of The Simpsons was playing. I stared at Marge Simpson with her big hair and easygoing smile. Marge, to me, was like the perfect American mom. So warm and forgiving that even if Bart was setting the house on fire, she'd continue chatting with her sisters on the phone.
"Maybe he just needs more love," she'd say.
Sometimes I wondered what it would be like to have an American mom, just for a day. I could eat all the chocolate chip cookies I wanted because American moms on TV were always baking them, or making casseroles, or organizing birthday parties with themes.
I'll tell you what they were not doing. They weren't pestering their kids to do more math.
Whatever. I'd show her. She didn't even have to know about the essay contest. One day, it'd just be like, hey, can you pass the chopsticks? Oh, and by the way, I want a motel.
Mr. Yao's car roared into the motel and interrupted my daydreaming. I flipped off the TV as he and Jason walked up to the front office.
It's important, son, that you understand every part of the family business, Mr. Yao said to Jason as they stepped in.
But I don't understand why we have to do this now, Jason protested.
Do what now?
I asked. Mr. Yao lifted up the front desk divider so that he and Jason could join me behind the desk.
Today, Jason's going to do your job, Mr. Yao announced. He's going to check customers in.
You've got to be kidding me. Jason was not a natural checker-inner. For one, he didn't have good customer service skills like me. No surprise there. But he also had basic problems figuring out the math.
So it's $20 a night plus tax, he told a customer while his father watched and I stood behind them.
The customer gave him a $100 bill and wanted change. Jason struggled to calculate the tax, which in Anaheim, California was 13%.
Do you have a calculator? He asked me.
It's $22.60, I told him. I'd checked so many people in by now, $22.60 was tattooed in my head.
Don't forget, I need two rooms, the customer reminded him.
Right, Jason said. He pulled out his hand and tried to do the math in the air with his fingers.
So that's 2 times 2260?
Mr. Yao yelled.
You can't figure out what that is?
Hang on, just give me a second, Jason said. He bit his lip.
You gotta carry the one and then add the...
Mr. Yao shook his head and stomped into the manager's quarters. After Jason finally figured out the math and gave the customer his keys, we went to find his father. He was in the kitchen.
I did it! I checked in my first customer, Jason told his dad proudly.
His father didn't say anything.
Well, how'd I do? Jason asked.
Mr. Yao breathed in and out, looking like he was trying to contain a wildfire, and was failing.
How'd you do? You were awful. A disgrace. All that using your fingers to do math. What are you, 5?
Jason's face turned beet red.
Your math isn't even as good as the girls.
Mr. Yao spat the words at him as he eyed Jason up and down.
God, you embarrass me.
It was his first time, I said in Jason's defense.
Yeah, well, he screwed up,
Mr. Yao growled. He stared at Jason long and hard to make sure his words sank in. I looked down. I could see the whites of Jason's knuckles. Afterward, when Mr. Yao went out to talk to my parents, I walked over to Jason. He was sitting all by himself in a corner in the front office. I knew exactly what he was feeling because I had felt it just a couple of hours ago when my mom yelled at me.
It's okay, I said softly.
Jason shook his head.
Don't,
he said. I put my hand on his shoulder anyway. He jerked his body away.
Just don't.
Chapter 21. Pounding woke us up at dawn the next day. Ear-splitting pounding like someone was attacking the front office door with a jackhammer. I jumped out of bed. Mr. Lorenz, one of the customers from the night before, was standing in front of the front office. Quickly, my dad buzzed him in.
My car! Mr. Lorenz shrieked. It's gone!
Mr. Lorenz's neon green Ford Thunderbird had been taken in the middle of the night. He had parked it right in front of his room, room 5, and when he woke up, it was gone.
We have to find out who did this, I said, turning to my parents. You think it was one of the other customers?
I immediately grabbed the customer logbook to see who stayed here last night.
Could have been anybody, Mr. Lorenz said. Somebody could have come in here in the middle of the night and taken off with my car.
I made a mental note to add parking lot gate to my wish list. My father picked up the phone.
Hello, Mr. Yao? My dad said. Something terrible has happened.
Mr. Yao arrived half an hour later.
How could this happen?
He said to my mom and dad, gesturing angrily with his hands.
We don't know, my dad said. We're just as surprised as you.
Mr. Yao picked up the phone and called the police. After that, he went around from room to room, waking up all the customers.
Have you seen a green Ford Thunderbird?
He asked them, peering suspiciously into their rooms. One of the guests said he did hear some noise at around 3 a.m., like someone was trying to start their car. Mr. Yao turned to my dad.
Did you see anybody leave at 3 a.m.?
He asked. My dad sheepishly admitted that he didn't know, he had been sleeping, to which Mr. Yao frowned and said,
Stop sleeping.
Mr. Yao then asked us if there were any customers who left without checking out. My dad and I went to check if anyone had gone in the middle of the night, and sure enough, when we went around, we found 5 keys. We gave Mr. Yao the numbers of the rooms and the names of the customers. Mr. Yao wanted to know what the customers looked like. I tried to describe them the best I could.
Let's see, Mr. Roberto had a mustache, I said, but it wasn't one of those long archy ones. It was a small and tidy one, and Mrs. Robinson, she was about the same height as my mom, a little taller.
I closed my eyes, trying to recall any other details about her.
She had long, curly black hair, past her shoulders, not in braids like some other black women, I said.
Mr. Yao's eyes bulged.
Wait a minute. She's black? He yelled. I thought I told you not to rent to bad people.
My throat went dry. I could hear the sound of my breathing, hard and fast.
You said bad people, not black people.
Any idiot knows. Black people are dangerous, Mr. Yao said.
That's not true. I was stunned. Hank's not dangerous, for one.
I narrowed my eyes at Mr. Yao.
You're the one who's dangerous.
Mia,
my dad said. Nervously, my dad turned to Mr. Yao.
Sir, we can't judge someone based on their skin color. It isn't right. This is America.
Mr. Yao snorted.
If you really believe that, you're even dumber than I thought, he said. Clearly, you have no idea how this country really works.
The sound of police cars pulling in made us look up.
What's going on here?
The police officers asked when they stepped in. There were 2 officers, both male and white. They had lots of things on their uniforms, sticks hanging from their belts, radios and walkie-talkies, which they talked into as they walked up to the front desk. And guns. I stared at their guns. Mr. Yao quickly filled them in on what happened. From the familiar way they talked with him, it seemed like they knew him. I wondered if the cops had been at the Cala Vista before. Mr. Yao handed them the list of customers who had left in the middle of the night. He told them he thought it was Mrs. Robinson who stole Mr. Lorenz's car. He went so far as to circle Mrs. Robinson's name and write the word black next to it.
And where is Mrs. Robinson now?
The officers asked.
She left, but I really don't think,
I started to say. The officers cut me off with a sharp shh. They only wanted to hear from Mr. Yao. Mr. Yao proceeded to tell the officers about the other customers. They seemed particularly interested in hearing about the Weekleys.
Are they home? Can we interview them?
Absolutely,
Mr. Yao said, leading the way outside. The Weekleys were outside talking about what happened. At the sight of Mr. Yao walking over, Hank quickly moved his tomato plant into his room. Mr. Yao did not like Hank growing plants outside his room. He said Hank hadn't rented that space. The cops walked up to the Weekleys.
We'd like to ask you guys some questions, the cops said. How long have you been living here?
About 3 months, Billy Bob said. I was staying over a days before.
One of the officers turned to Hank and asked,
And you?
About 6 months, Hank told him.
The officer jotted it down.
Do you have a job? He asked Hank.
Yeah, I work over at the gas station on Orange and Knott, he said.
What's this about? Fred asked. You think we did it?
Mrs. Q put a hand to her chest and let out a shrill, Good God!
Sir, ma'am, we're not saying that. We're just asking questions, the cop said.
But you're asking the wrong people,
I interjected. They ignored me. As they carried on interrogating the Weeklies, I kept trying to interrupt. But every time I tugged on their shirt, the police officer said,
Please don't touch me.
Finally, they told the Weeklies they could all go back to their rooms. As the Weekleys started walking back to their rooms, one of the officers pulled Hank aside.
"Except for you," he said.
"Why me?"
Hank asked.
"Because I said so,"
the cop said, staring Hank down. The Weekleys looked at Hank, and Hank looked at them. Then he nodded and told them to go on without him. After the other Weekleys left, both cops turned their attention back to Hank.
"Now, where were we? You said you work at Orange and Knot," the commanding officer said, turning to the other cop. "Orange and Knot. Let's check that out."
He looked at Hank again.
"Have you been having any financial difficulties lately?" he asked.
"Excuse me?"
Hank asked. "Have you needed to borrow any money?"
"No."
"Have you sold anything in the last 10 weeks?
The cops suddenly turned their attention to me.
"Do people ever come over looking for him? Does he ever ask you to hold something for him? Doesn't have to be big."
I shook my head.
"No."
The officer seemed displeased with my answer and frowned.
"I'm sorry. I'm going to need you to go back inside with your parents."
"Hank's a good guy,"
I yelled as the officer took my arm and dragged me away. The whole time, I looked back at Hank, at the frustration and fury in his eyes as he said the words over and over.
"I didn't do it."
I sat with my nose pressed up against the window, watching the police interrogate Hank. Several times I ran outside, only to be escorted back in.
"See? The police know I'm right,"
Mr. Yao said, taking their interrogation of Hank as evidence that his theory about black people was valid. He was wrong. The only thing it proved was that the police were just like him. I counted the minutes until he and his racist thoughts would finally leave. Surprisingly, the person who remained most calm throughout the incident was Mr. Lorenz. It sounded like he had car insurance, and he figured he could get the money back that way. At 12:30, the cops finally stopped interrogating Hank and got back in their cars. They didn't have enough evidence to make an arrest. Because he didn't do it, duh. But they said they'd be back.
"You'll hear from us again real soon," the commanding officer, Officer Phillips, said, looking at all of us.
His eyes lingered especially long on Hank before he turned away. After the cops and Mr. Yao finally left, I went over to Hank's room. Hank was sitting in his chair, slumped over like a half-filled sack. He looked absolutely exhausted. I walked over and put my hand on his shoulder.
"I'm so sorry you had to go through that."
"It's all right," he said.
"It's not all right. They were awful. They just assumed you did it. How could they think that?"
The more I thought about it, the more riled up I got. But Hank just sat there, quiet and unfazed, gazing in the general direction of the pool. The sun burned through the window. I could see little tiny particles of dust floating in his room.
"Why are you not more upset?" I asked him.
He shrugged.
"Guess I'm just used to it," he said. "This kind of thing happens to me all the time."
"It does?"
He nodded.
"To all black people in this country, in some way or the other."
He dropped his head into his hands. I sat very still, thinking about what he said. I could hear the faint honking of cars, a couple laughing in the room next to us. I wanted to scream,
"Stop! Stop honking! Stop laughing! How can it be business as usual when this was happening to people like Hank?"
Hank got up and went to wash his face. When he returned, he was holding a pack of Oreos. As he set the Oreos down onto his little table, I stared at the cookies and thought about the world of difference there was between the two colors. Chapter 22. I sat at my desk with my hand over my tummy, not hearing a word Mrs. Douglas was saying. Wave after wave of nausea hit me every time I thought about the day before, the words Mr. Yao said, the words the cop said. I tried to drown them out, but they kept coming back. Jason turned to me and said,
"Hey, meet me at the auditorium during recess."
I looked over at him. Sometimes I forgot how much he was the spitting image of his father.
"Please," Jason said. "It's important."
I was about to shake my head, but there was an urgency in his eyes I'd never seen before. Did his dad tell him what happened? Was that why he needed to talk to me?
so he could apologize? At recess, I walked over to the auditorium. Jason was already inside waiting for me. He smiled when he saw me come in. He was holding something behind his back, dandelions, which he presented to me.
"These are for you," he said, stretching out his arm. I stared at the flowers, so warm and bright, in my downcast hands.
"You like them?" he asked. I nodded slowly.
"Good,"
Jason said, relieved.
"But what I really want is for your dad."
"I know. I'm going to tell him. As soon as he gets back from his business trip, I'm going to tell him," Jason said.
I nodded. Good for him for finally standing up to his dad.
"I don't care what he says," Jason said. "He needs to know how much I like you."
I stopped nodding.
"Wait, what?"
I asked. He grabbed my arms and looked into my eyes.
"I like you, Mia," he said again. I shook my head.
"No, no."
I didn't want to believe it myself. I was like, "How is this possible?"
Jason rattled on a mile a minute.
"But it's true. Whenever I'm around you, Mia, I get this tingly feeling."
My insides twisted and turned. A slimy snake was zigzagging through me. The more Jason described, the more I squirmed.
"This isn't happening,"
I said, squeezing my eyes shut. I could feel my breakfast at the base of my throat.
"Oh, it's happening," he said, "and it's going to be great."
I turned to him.
"Jason, I don't like you,"
I exploded. Jason looked like he'd been punched.
But you said you liked the flowers. You said you wanted me to tell my dad."
"I thought you were talking about your dad being racist."
Jason took a step back.
"My dad's not racist," he said.
"Yes, he is,"
I gasped to fill my lungs.
"He's racist."
"Shut up," Jason yelled.
"No, you shut up." I looked at him hard. "I could never like you, never, not even if you were the last boy on earth. I'd rather like a rock."
He turned and ran. I stood in the auditorium listening to the echo of my words, feeling a tiny bit mean, yet 100% relieved. Jason didn't come back to class after recess. When I asked, Mrs. Douglas said he wasn't feeling well and had to go home. Lupe immediately started poking me and asking me what happened. And when I finally told her, she wasn't even surprised.
"It makes sense," she said. "I mean, you're both Chinese."
"How did that make sense? Just because we're both Chinese, we're supposed to like each other? What about the fact that he's evil and I'm not?"
"Maybe it's a good thing," Lupe said. "Maybe his dad will be nicer to your family from now on."
I shook my head at her. The way I shot him down, there was no going nice after that. There was only going nuclear. Chapter 23. Hank was waiting for me at the motel when I got back from school.
"What are you doing home so early?" I asked him.
Usually, he didn't get home until well past 6.
"The cops came around to the gas station. They started asking me questions, asking my employer," he said.
"And?"
I asked him. He stared into the tiny lines of the front desk wood.
"Then my boss freaked out and fired me."
I felt the floor beneath me open up and swallow me whole.
"What? But you didn't do anything wrong."
"Doesn't matter. The boss said it was bad for business having the cops poke around."
Hank pulled out a crumpled $100 bill from his pocket and slid it across the desk.
"This here's my last paycheck," he said.
I looked at the bill on the table.
"What are you going to do?"
I asked him. He didn't say anything. He just gazed out the window at the leaves in the pool.
"Hank,"
I said loudly,
"you have to fight this."
Hank shook his head.
"You don't get it, kid," he said. "I've been fighting my whole life. I'm done. It's no use fighting. People are gonna be the way they're gonna be."
After Hank went back to his room, I searched the kitchen for canned foods. If that was his last paycheck and he'd just given it to us, he was going to need all the help he could get. I was in the middle of rummaging through our fridge when I heard a knock on the door. It was the security guard from the Topaz Inn 2 doors down, a Chinese guy about my parents' age, probably second or third generation, from the confident way he spoke English.
"Open up, I gotta talk to you,"
he hollered. I buzzed him in.
Heard you guys got a little visit from the cops, he said. A sly grin stretched across his face. The Topaz Inn people did not like us, and we didn't like them. To say that we had a little rivalry was an understatement. Every day, they tried to undercut our prices. They had a bigger motel, so naturally, they had more rooms. But we had a better location, being the first motel on our block. You had to drive past us to get to Topaz Inn, which drove them nuts. The Topaz people came up with all kinds of ridiculous tactics to get back at us, including one time when they had one of their people stand a few blocks up with a sign that said, "Don't stay at the Cala Vista. It's full of roaches. Stay at the Topaz." Mr. Yao happened to be driving by that day. When he saw what they were doing, he went straight to Ralph's, bought a dozen eggs, and hurled them at the sign. So it was quite a shock to see the Topaz security guard standing here in our lobby. "What do you want?" I asked him.
"Look, I know we've had our differences over the years," he said. "But in light of what's happened, I've come to offer a truce."
I stared at him. "A truce?" He nodded.
"What happened over here last night was a tragedy," he said. "We were so upset when we heard about it."
"Really?" I said. I would have thought they'd be celebrating.
"Really?" he said. "Now look, it's in neither of our interests if bad people stay at our motels. It gives the area a terrible rep and business suffers. So why don't we do this?"
He pulled out a piece of paper.
"This here is a list of all the bad people we've checked in last month," he said.
I peered curiously at his list.
"I'm sure you have a few names of your own you'd like to add to it," he said.
I did, starting with the drunk guy. "So here's what we're going to do. You tell me the names of your bad people, and I'll tell you the names of our bad people. I'm going to show the list to the Lagoon Motel people and the other stores on our street, so we're all in on it. And if anybody from the list calls looking for a room, we'll tell them the same thing. No vacancy. How's that?"
I nodded. It sounded like a plan. I thought back to all the things that had happened these last few weeks. We could sure use more safety around here.
"Alrighty then," he said. He took out his pen, and I took out my dad's big ledger with all the customers' names and information. "Ready?" he asked.
"Ready,"
I said. He grinned, revealing a mouthful of very yellow teeth.
"Let's start with last month. Give me the names of all the black customers who have come through here in the last month," he said.
I slammed the ledger shut.
"Get out," I said, pointing at the door.
"Hey, no need to get worked up," he said, holding his hands up. "I'm just trying to help."
"Get out," I repeated.
"Suit yourself," he huffed as he walked out, stuffing his list into his pocket. "But don't come crying to me when this place gets robbed again, which it will."
Chapter 24. I rocked back and forth with a ledger in my arms, waiting for Lupe. I'd called her as soon as the awful security guard left. As her dad's car pulled in, the air howled of a coming storm.
"We have got to sneak over there and grab those lists," I said to Lupe. I couldn't wait to rip them to shreds.
Lupe shook her head. She plopped down at the front desk.
"That won't do any good," she said. "We'd get caught, and besides, the stores probably already have copies."
Lupe helped herself to a blank piece of white paper from the fax machine and started drawing with a pencil. Lupe was always drawing. Buildings, people, dogs, cats, mountains, and most of all, trees. She loved trees.
"Will you stop drawing?"
I all but shouted at her. Lupe put her pencil down and gave me a look.
"The thing about prejudice is you can't tell people not to be prejudiced. You've got to show them. It's like writing."
I thought back to what Mrs. Douglas was always saying. You gotta show, not tell.
"Why can't you tell people?" I asked.
"Because they won't listen. It'll go in one ear and out the other," she said.
"So how do we show them?" I asked.
She pointed to the ledger still in my arms.
"Who was here that night?" she asked. "Does it say in there?"
I opened up the ledger to the day that the car got stolen and ran my fingers down the list of customers. There were 5 customers who left in the middle of the night. They were Peter Orviati, Rebecca Thompson, Tommy Smith, Javier Roberto, Loretta Robinson. Next to their names, we'd copied down all their permanent addresses so that in case they left something, I could mail it back to them.
The address is sprawled as far south as San Diego and as far north as Sacramento.
Have the police checked out these addresses yet?
Lupe asked. I shook my head. To my knowledge, they didn't even have them.
Well, what are you waiting for? Lupe asked. Call them up.
The customers?
No, the police.
My eyes widened. We'd never called the police before, not even on the day that the car got stolen. Mr. Yao had been the one who called.
Back in China, I had fond memories of the policemen. We used to call them uncle, too. They'd help the elderly cross the road and find their way home if they got lost. I'm not even sure if they had guns.
We'd sing songs in school about them, songs like, if I was walking down the street and I found a penny, I'd give it to Uncle Policeman. Things were different here. Here, the policemen had guns, and if you found a penny, I'm pretty sure you'd keep it. I know my dad and I would.
I went over to the drawer under the phone system and retrieved the card Officer Phillips gave us. He was the officer in charge of the case. I picked up the phone, dialed the number, and handed the receiver to Lupe.
You talk, I told her. Lupe pushed the receiver away hard.
No, this is your motel. You need to talk, she said.
Hesitantly, I put the receiver up to my ear. Officer Phillips picked up on the fourth ring.
Hi, Officer Phillips. It's, Mia Tang calling from the Cala Vista Motel, I said.
The what?
The Cala Vista. You know, the motel where the car was stolen the other day, I said.
Listen, kid, I've got a lot of work to do, he said.
He sounded really annoyed to hear from me. I looked at Lupe, who nudged me to go on.
I just wanted to ask you if you've looked into all the customers that left early that night. I have all their home addresses here. I can give them to you right now if you like, I said.
Will you just let us do our jobs, kid? He said. We already have a strong lead.
You mean Hank? I said. He didn't do it!
How many times did I have to keep saying it?
And by the way, did you know you guys got him fired from his job?
He recently got fired from his job? Officer Phillips's voice perked up. That explains why he needed the money.
No, you guys got him fired. His boss saw you guys asking him questions and fired him, I told him. Now he doesn't have a job.
There was silence on the other end. I looked over at Lupe.
Well, that's unfortunate, Officer Phillips said. But I'm sure there was more to it than that.
I shook my head into the phone.
No, there wasn't.
Look, I really have work to do, he said.
So that's it then. You're just going to give up? You're not even going to look into the addresses?
I asked him.
We're not giving up. We just have more pressing cases to deal with at the moment involving armed robbery.
And what about Mr. Lorenz? What's he supposed to do?
Oh, he's fine. I talked to him the other day. Already filed the claim with his insurance. Gonna get his money in 30 days. The good thing about this case is nobody got hurt, said Officer Phillips.
And with that, he hung up the phone.
Yeah, nobody, except Hank.
I stared at the phone in my hand. I couldn't believe that Officer Phillips.
We have to call his manager, I told Lupe. He must have a manager.
Lupe shook her head.
It doesn't sound like this is a top priority for them.
Well, it should be.
You'd think.
What should we do?
I looked down at the list of addresses.
We can't go to all these places by ourselves.
Maybe the car will turn up, Lupe said. Maybe someone will see it and put in a call.
Maybe. Chapter 25. As Lupe was leaving the motel, a car pulled in and someone got out. My dad and I went out to greet her. It was another immigrant. My mother's face softened when she saw it was a woman this time. Aunt Ling was a friend of Uncle Lee's, and she was so famished, she practically inhaled the dumplings my mother made at dinner. "Eat up, there's plenty here," my mother said, even though I knew that wasn't really true. In between bites, the woman told us where she'd been working, at a nail salon down in Irvine, California.
"Irvine," my dad said, "that's supposed to be nice."
"Isn't that by the beach?" my mom asked.
"Well, I never got to see it," Aunt Ling said. "I spent the entire time hunched over, kneeling on the floor."
She told us how she would hold the hands of wealthy American women as they complained right in front of her about their Chinese maids and how they were probably taking things because,
don't they all steal? It was like I wasn't even there. They didn't even see me, she said. I was just a nail clipper to them.
My mother reached for Aunt Ling's hand. Well, we see you, she said. My mother and I led Aunt Ling over to room one, our best room. Aunt Ling was so touched by our hospitality. The next day, she insisted on doing my mother's nails.
Oh, that's very nice of you, but it's not necessary, my mother said bashfully, tucking her hands under her armpit to hide them from Aunt Ling.
Let me see, Aunt Ling insisted. Don't be shy.
Yeah, Mom, come on, let's see, I said.
Reluctantly, my mom put her hand out in front. We gasped. My mother's once shiny, smooth fingernails were now dry, yellow, and rough. The cleaning supplies she used every day to clean the rooms must have somehow seeped through her gloves and into her nails. Her nails were practically melting off her hands.
It's been like this for weeks, my mom said, tears coming to her eyes. I don't know what to do. It's all that Ajax and bleach.
Don't panic. I know just the thing, Aunt Ling said.
She got up and went into the kitchen, where she grabbed a cut-up lemon from the fridge and baking soda from the cupboard. Next, she filled two bowls of warm water. She put the baking soda in the bowls and soaked my mom's hands in them. After half an hour, she lifted each hand up and scrubbed the nails with the lemon. I watched as she worked, scrubbing and drying, polishing and cleaning. When she was finally done, the nails looked transformed. She was able to get rid of most of the roughness, and what she couldn't get off, she covered up with a coat of glossy red nail polish. My mom was beaming.
Quick, take a picture, my mom said.
I smiled and kneeled down before her and Aunt Ling. I pretend clicked with my finger as my mother held her beautifully manicured hands out to the camera.
Eggplant, I said.
As we waited for my mother's nail polish to dry, I asked Aunt Ling where she was heading to next.
Sacramento, she announced. There are some new nail salons opening up there.
You're going to Sacramento? I asked.
One of the addresses from that ledger was in Sacramento. I leaped out of my chair and raced over to the front desk to get the ledger.
Can you do me a favor? Can you swing by this address? I need you to check something for me.
Aunt Ling promised she'd go by the address when she got up to Sacramento. If the Thunderbird were there, she'd call me right away. Before she left, she asked my mom whether she could tell any of her friends about the Cala Vista.
They could really use a place to stay. Their boss gave them the boot, and they're living out of their cars, she said.
Oh, that's hard, my mom said, grimacing. We've been there.
My parents exchanged a look.
The only thing is our boss, Mr. Yao, my dad said. He lives right here in Anaheim.
Sometimes he doesn't come for weeks, though, I reminded them. He has motels all over the place.
Aunt Ling put a well-manicured finger to her chin.
You know what would be great? If you guys had a sign or something for when he's here, she thought out loud.
You mean a don't come in sign?
I chuckled.
Yeah, but not something he'd understand, she said. A secret sign that only we understand.
I looked around the front desk. My eyes fell on an old blue Yankees baseball cap. I picked it up.
How about this?
I asked Aunt Ling. Her eyes widened.
Yes, she exclaimed. That's perfect.
Chapter 26. It was agreed that from now on, if we put the blue hat on the front desk, it meant don't come in, Mr. Yao's there, and no hat meant come on in. We all shook hands on the new system, and Aunt Ling got into her car and drove off. I hoped she would tell all her friends, and we would soon get lots of visitors, visitors who were heading in the direction of the four remaining addresses. Lupe was delighted to hear I was marching forward with my plan to show, not tell. She came over again the next day after school. The two of us sat at the front desk where, as usual, she proceeded to draw trees.
Why are you always drawing those things? I asked her.
Lupe didn't look up. Her eyes were completely focused on the page. Today, she was drawing a massive oak with tiny little lines in the trunk.
I like trees, she said, shading in the bark.
She didn't just like trees. She was obsessed with drawing them and was really good at it, too. There was so much detail in her creations, hundreds of twigs and branches and leaves, which she would labor over for hours. She pulled out a blank piece of paper from the fax machine.
"Here, I'll teach you," she said.
I looked at her, wary. I wasn't exactly what you would call artistic. My idea of a good portrait was a smiley face with sunglasses.
"You want to start off with the trunk," she said, pointing to my paper.
I did as I was told and drew two thick lines from my trunk.
"Not so straight," she said.
She took her pencil and started making little vertical lines, lumps, and curves in my trunk.
"No tree is perfect, remember that," she said. "That's what gives it character."
I smiled at Lupe and how grown up she sounded. It was one of the things I liked the most about her. She showed me how to add branches to my trunk. According to her, the easiest way to draw branches and twigs was to make lots and lots of tiny little Vs. It was hard work making all those little Vs, and I got a little impatient, so I started shading in my tree, eager to get on with it.
"Don't rush," Lupe said, frowning at my shading and pointing to the tiny little twigs on her own tree. "See? It's all in the detail."
We worked side by side for an hour, neither of us saying anything except occasionally to borrow the eraser. So deep were we into our drawings that we nearly jumped when Hank came and knocked on the door. I buzzed him in.
"Hey, can I have Mr. Yao's number?" Hank asked.
"What for?"
I asked him.
"Didn't you say he had all those other motels? Maybe he needs a handyman," Hank said.
"You want to ask Mr. Yao for a job?"
I asked. I glanced at Lupe.
"But..."
"But what?" Hank asked.
He leaned into me.
"Come on, Mia. I'm desperate."
I wanted to tell him it didn't matter how desperate he was. Mr. Yao was not going to go for it. Not after all the horrible things he said that night when the car got stolen. But then I looked into Hank's eyes. He was the one who first warned me about Mr. Yao. There's no way he would be asking me this if he had any other option. So I dialed the number and handed him the phone. "It's ringing," I told him. As Hank picked up the phone and started talking to Mr. Yao, Lupe and I hopped off our stools and went to my room. Gently, I picked up the extension.
"Hi, Mr. Yao. It's Hank Caleb calling from the Cala Vista," Hank said.
"What do you want?"
Mr. Yao asked, barely hiding the irritation in his voice.
"I just wanted to call you to see if you might need a handyman at one of your motels," Hank said.
"Why? You know somebody?" Mr. Yao asked.
"Yeah, me," Hank told him. "I spent a summer painting houses. I'm good with power tools. I know how to use a pressure hose."
Mr. Yao cut him off and told him flat out he wasn't interested.
"The answer is no," Mr. Yao said.
"But Mr. Yao, you didn't even let him finish," I interjected.
"I don't need to let him finish. There's nothing handy about Hank, only Ma Fan,"
Mr. Yao said, and hung up. I avoided Hank's gaze as I walked back into the front office.
"What's Ma Fan mean?" he asked.
"I don't know,"
I lied. I couldn't bring myself to say that Ma Fan in Chinese meant trouble. Chapter 27. In school the next day, Mrs. Douglas gave us back our stories. I stared at mine, lying upside down on my desk.
"Please read my comments," Mrs. Douglas said. "I took a lot of time writing them. I've also graded your stories."
A hand shot up. "Did anyone get an A?"
"Yes, of course," Mrs. Douglas said.
"Well, did anyone get a C?"
"Stop fishing, Dylan,"
Mrs. Douglas said. All around me, my classmates started turning their stories around. I looked over at Lupe and watched as she turned hers over and a small smile escaped on her lips. I looked down at my own story. With a deep breath, I turned it around. There, plastered in red ink, on the very top of my essay, was a big, fat C-. 12. That's the number of exclamation marks my teacher used to describe how bad my writing was.
"Check your grammar!"
Exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
"Tenses, Mia! Don't forget tenses!"
Exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
"You need to proofread!" Exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark.
The little minus sign on the top of the page winked at me, reminding me that C wasn't bad enough. It had to be C minus. I stared at the red marks all over my story, a hot, bloody mess. In every sentence, there was something circled or crossed out. Why couldn't I ever get the tenses right? I could hear my mom's voice in my head shouting, "Because there are no tenses in Chinese!" My mother was right. How could I possibly be as good as the other kids in their language? I should just forget about the essay contest. Who was I kidding? I didn't stand a chance. If I entered, it would just be $300 down the toilet. I stared at my classmates, drinking in their glee as they proudly waved their stories around. I couldn't stop looking at them, showing off their grades, grinning from ear to ear. I envied them with every bone in my body. When at last the school bell rang, I skulked home, my legs like jello, my feet cement blocks. The words, "You are never getting off your roller coaster," played in my head like a news ticker. I stashed my C-minus story deep in my closet when I got home, along with the essay contest printout I had been saving. I thought if I hid it, I wouldn't have to ever think about it again. But that afternoon, the cable was acting up again, and Lupe came over.
"So, what'd you get on your story?"
Lupe asked. I shook my head at her.
"You don't want to know," I mumbled. She shrugged.
"Oh, come on, it can't be that bad," she said. I didn't say anything.
"Who cares? It's just a grade," Lupe said. "You should have seen my grades when I first started going to school here."
But it wasn't just a grade. It meant I was no good at writing. And how was I supposed to win a motel if I wasn't any good at writing? Before I could help it, everything came pouring out. Lupe's eyes bulged when she heard about the essay contest. For a second, I worried I had made a terrible mistake telling her. What if she applied for it herself? But then she reached over, took one of the guest comment cards, and scribbled something down. She handed me the card. I looked down at it. It said, "You can't win if you don't play." I looked back up at Lupe.
"But it costs $300 to play," I reminded her.
Lupe shrugged.
"My dad says in America, you gotta pay to play," she said.
I looked out the window at her dad up on the roof, climbing down with all those thick wires around his shoulder. Suddenly, Lupe got quiet.
"What's wrong?"
I asked her.
"Nothing," she said.
I knew it wasn't nothing, so I asked her again.
"I'll be sad if you move away to Vermont," she whispered.
This almost knocked me over. It hadn't even occurred to me how she might feel if I won. She had to know that there was no chance I'd win.
"I just got a C minus, remember?"
I thought this would make her laugh, but it didn't. Lupe just kept staring at the floor. She didn't even look up when her dad came in and told her it was time to go.
"See you tomorrow," I said.
"See ya," Lupe muttered. As she pushed open the front office door, she turned and said,
"Oh, and Mia?"
"Yes?"
"I hope you win."
Her words warmed me to my toes. Chapter 28. When you've moved schools as many times as I have, you start to think of everyone as temporary. Friends come and go. You might have a best friend, but you know in the back of your mind, she's not always going to be there. You'll change schools, or she'll change schools, and that'll be that. For years, I told myself that was okay. That was just the way it was, kind of like replacing a toothbrush. Sure, you might like your toothbrush a lot, but sooner or later, you'd have to replace it. You'd get a new toothbrush, and it might feel strange and uncomfortable at first, but then you'd get used to it. I guess I never thought about how the toothbrush might feel. I never thought the toothbrush would miss me. I was walking through the motel, still thinking about Lupe, when my dad waved me over to room 8. "Look what a customer left on the table." I stepped into the room and saw a $5 bill and 3 $1 bills lying on the table along with a note. "To the little girl who checked us in, keep doing a great job."
$8, my dad exclaimed. "You know what that means."
I smiled. Chinese people believe that if you receive $8, it's good luck. That's because the word for the number 8, ba, rhymes with the word for prosperity, fa.
It was such a nice surprise that I went back to the front office to write the customers a thank you note. As I got their registration card out and copied down their address, it briefly crossed my mind that maybe I should stop. Given the grade I'd just gotten in English, did I really know what I was doing? But then I thought about Lupe and how she said you can't win if you don't play. I now had $8 more to play with, $8 that had just dropped down from the sky. I had to say thank you. I went over to Mrs. T's room to try and borrow a dictionary. Mrs. T was always reading. With her cat-eye glasses, she sat by the pool and plowed through at least 2 newspapers and a magazine a day. Not only did Mrs. T have a dictionary, but she was delighted to lend me hers. It was a massive book, almost as thick as the Yellow Pages. It wasn't just a dictionary, either. It had something called a thesaurus, too. A thesaurus, Mrs. T said, was a list of words that meant the same thing as other words. You could trade them freely, like you can trade one U.S. dollar for 8 Chinese renminbi. I carried Mrs. T's nifty dictionary thesaurus over to the front office and started composing my letter. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Miller, thank you so much for the $8 tip along with the kind note. It made my day, and I was having a bad day. I got a bad grade at school. It was so bad that I was thinking about giving up on something. But then 2 things happened. My friend from school said something nice to me, and I got your note and tip. I think that's a sign, don't you? My parents are big on signs. I'm not, especially if they are bad, but I like the good ones. Thanks for giving me a good sign, and thanks for staying at the Cala Vista. I hope you'll come again soon. Sincerely, Mia Tang, Assistant Manager. I worked with Mrs. T's thick dictionary thesaurus, trading words, looking things up, learning phrases like big on and made my day, crossing things out, and trying things on until at last I was satisfied with my letter. I copied the letter over onto a clean sheet of paper, sealed the envelope, and placed it in the outgoing mail pile. Then I had another idea. If Mr. and Mrs. Miller were willing to give me a tip, maybe other guests would be as well. Who knew? Maybe if I saved up, I could have enough to enter the essay contest. I called up Lupe.
That's a great idea, she said. You should totally do it.
Lupe said everyone was always giving out tips in restaurants. Even her dad, if he did an extra good job, got a tip from his customers. Except Mr. Yao, of course. Mr. Yao never gave Lupe's dad a tip, not even on Christmas Day last year when he had to go over to his house to repair the cable. The tip jar would have to be a secret, though. Mr. Yao couldn't see it. If he saw it, he'd just take the money like he took everything else. I wasn't even sure I wanted my parents to see it. They still didn't know about the essay contest. If my mom knew, she might say I didn't stand a chance. And the last thing I needed was her telling me I couldn't do it. I hung up the phone and went to the kitchen where I found an empty plastic jar. I taped a post-it on the front of it and wrote the words, tip jar. I added some stars for good measure. I put the jar on the front desk. I decided I would only put it out when it was just me. When my parents or Mr. Yao were around, or when I was at school, I'd hide it under the desk. I lifted the divider and stood back to admire the jar. It looked good there. I went out the back to return Mrs. T's dictionary back to her. As I was walking across the parking lot, I noticed a couple I'd just checked in going up to my mom, who was walking back from one of the rooms. They were holding a camera.
Excuse me, will you take a picture of us?
The woman asked my mom. She grinned at her boyfriend.
This is our first vacation together.
Your first vacation? That's great,
my mom said in her broken English.
Vacation, the couple corrected. Anyway, will you take our picture?
Sure,
my mom said, taking the camera from her. The couple showed her which button to push, and I could tell my mom was tingling with excitement because she kept running her fingers along the zoom. Finally, a real camera! As my mom put her eye to the viewfinder, the couple hugged each other and gave her great big toothy grins.
Eggplant, my mom said, except she pronounced it eggplan.
The woman frowned a little.
You know, it's eggplant, said the woman after my mom put the camera down.
What?
Eggplant, the woman said,
emphasizing the T so vigorously she was practically spitting on my mom. I could feel the heat of my mom's embarrassment from where I was standing.
If you're going to say it, you should say it right. And really, you should be saying cheese, the woman said as she walked off with her camera.
My mom just stood there, looking so sad I wanted to run up to her and tell her, hey, it's okay. I just got a C- on my English story. I know how you feel. But I knew this would not make her feel better. It would only make her feel worse. It almost made me want to do more math. Chapter 29. Jason was back at school the next day. He hadn't been since the day in the auditorium. Mrs. Douglas still said it was because he was sick. I felt bad and was kind of worried about him, but now seeing him in his seat, glaring at me and snickering with some of the other kids, I saw that he was perfectly all right. He just had a bad case of the I hate Mias. Slowly, I walked over to my desk and took a seat beside him. He and his friend stopped talking, but I could feel their eyeballs on me. I could feel them sinking into my pants. I had on a pair of these thin floral pants my mom got from Goodwill. I'll admit it, they looked a lot like pajama pants, but they were $6.99 for a bundle of six, and you couldn't beat that. What a deal! My mom had squealed in the store when she spotted them. Your mom has the best shopping eyes! She had seemed so proud and so happy, I let her buy them for me, and they were pretty comfortable. But now as my eyes slid over to the other kids, all of them in jeans, I wondered if it was a horrible mistake. I used to have jeans, too. In fact, I boarded the plane in a brand new pair of jeans that my aunt bought for me in Beijing. But they were too small on me now, and a new pair of jeans costs $9.99, much too expensive considering how quickly I was growing. Since coming to the motel, I had grown a full inch, a fact not lost on Mr. Yao, who motioned with his greasy fingers every time he came over.
See that growth? I paid for that growth.
Hey, Mia, Jason said loudly. I looked over at him. He glanced at the other kids, who were all covering their mouths with their hands, like they were trying to hold in some terrific inside joke.
How come you always wear those pants? Jason asked.
The other kids exploded with laughter. I shifted my body away from them. My pants, seconds ago so soft and comfortable, now felt scorching hot.
Ignore them, Lupe said.
We were sitting on the grass at recess. I glared at Jason and his friends, who were sitting on the other side, cracking up and pointing at me.
He'll get bored and move on to someone else, Lupe said.
Somehow I doubted that, and not 5 seconds later, Jason yelled at us from across the playground.
Has she not heard of jeans?
Jason hollered to thunderous laughter. That's it. I couldn't take it anymore. I got up, only to be pulled back down by Lupe.
Ignore them, she repeated.
She was being very calm about the whole thing. Annoyingly calm, if you asked me. If my cousin Shen were here, he'd be over there in 2 seconds. Back in China, if anybody picked on me at school, he would go up to them and give them a piece of his mind. He didn't care who it was, even if it was his best friend, a fidgety kid with glasses named Mo. Mo always liked to go up to me and pull on my ponytail, and one time he pulled too hard and I cried. Shen told Mo if he ever did it again, he'd pull his ear down to his butt. Mo kept his fingers to himself after that. I tried not to think about those memories. Instead, I tried to focus on the words Lupe was saying now. She was telling me about her grandmother in Mexico and how she was sick, so her mom was sending money home. That's why money was tight for their family. I nodded as I listened, trying hard not to look down, because despite everything she was saying, Lupe was still wearing jeans.
Chapter 30. Mr. Yao was at the motel when I got home. Hank had stopped paying his rent, but he wasn't moving out. He had done some research and discovered a law in California that said that if someone lived somewhere continuously for more than 30 days, that made them a tenant. That gave them certain rights, including the right not to be kicked out all of a sudden, even if they stopped paying rent.
Now you listen to me, Hank. You pay up right this minute.
Mr. Yao pounded on Hank's door.
I immediately threw the blue baseball cap onto the front desk, hid my tip jar in my room, and went out the back to join my parents. They were standing awkwardly next to Mr. Yao in front of Hank's. Mr. Yao had apparently insisted they come with him. He said it was for